It's now time for Race Chat Live with Chris Creighton and Craig Moore.
Howdy, race fans. How the heck are you? Interesting. Uh-oh. I think someone...
Hello? Yeah. Chris?
You guys here?
Chris?
Yeah, I'm here.
Got me?
No. You guys here?
Chris, I got you.
All right.
So I don't know if Mike was on the whole time. Oh, boy. Echo.
Okay, can you guys hear me?
I hear echo.
Can you guys hear me now?
Yeah.
Any echo?
No.
Okay. All right, so something or another, when, and I don't even know if my whole opening log even was heard, because for some reason, when more than one person, I believe, comes into the studio using possibly the Direct Connect line, what that does is it sends people back into mute. And the feedback was coming from, it's hard to explain, but I finally figured out why we keep having feedback, and it has something to do with more than one person, I believe, logging into the studio using the host line. I'm not sure, but I use a direct link to call in when I'm using my computer. So see, now somebody's just transferred me over to, is that you, Jason? Is that you, CJ Sports?
I didn't transfer you over, but there's only one person calling a host. It will not let anybody else call in a host, so that can't be it. Because whoever calls in first as host, that's the only person. It'll say it'll actually say you've already called in as host or something, or somebody's already called in as host. So there's going to be one host. I didn't just transfer you. I have no idea who that is.
Yeah, somebody just transferred the 601-938-2503, and they just moved it back. Who's doing that?
I just moved it back because I didn't know if you needed it on there. I didn't move it over to make it live. I just moved it back because since you asked, I just assumed it wasn't supposed to be over. Does it need to be over on live?
No, actually, that's where the echo was coming from. I plugged in through my computer. See, normally I use a phone that I have my headphones plugged into, but I have an Apple phone. So I called in on my Apple phone, but something or another, when we're first all logging in, something happens and creates it to jump over there. Has Craig made it yet? I don't even know if my opening dialogue come on, but it's okay. We've got it under control now. The tech issues should be over. You can hear me loud and clear, Mr. CJ Sports. Taz, can you hear me loud and clear?
I sure can.
No echoes or anything like that.
And to answer your question, Taz, yes, we're actually live still right now.
Oh, wow.
For those that are wondering, we have a chat room that they run during the show. A lot of times I'll chime in and answer things or respond to things, but we run a chat room as well, so we kind of communicate, and then Taz just asked, are we actually live? So for those that wonder where that just came from, yes, we're actually live. I do want to take this opportunity to thank, first of all, the Race Chat Live crew for everything they do, being here every Monday night and having an action-packed, funny, entertaining show. All plans are, I'm still crazily understaffed, and for anybody that works in really anywhere in the world at this point knows how miserably hard it is to have a staff and have people actually come to work with all these stupid unemployment stimulus tax return checks that everybody's getting. Nobody wants to work still. So I've been incredibly understaffed. I basically had to beg two people not to quit today. So I'm hoping that we find a couple more people for the evening shift. I'll ask Miss Brandy. It's kind of been go to work at 4 a.m., get home anywhere between 6 and 8 p.m., and kind of just go to sleep. It's been a rough few weeks, and I am the busiest store in the entire market, so it's just physically and mentally and everything draining. So I have not been on the air for the last few weeks. I'm hoping tomorrow that everything goes as planned, and the 110 Nation Sports Show will be on tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. That's what the plans are. I did drop a couple of press releases. I'm going to be working on something else while you guys do the show. And start getting stuff on the site going and on Facebook. So make sure you guys check us out on Facebook, the 110 Nation Sports. Follow us on Twitter at 110 Nation. But I just want to throw a few things out there real quick before you guys jump into everything. I'm going to kick back and listen to the show for probably the next 30 to 45 minutes before I call tonight. 3:15, 3:20 in the morning comes early. So I don't make it long. It's a struggle to even make it through my shows. But I'm going to try to get a few things knocked out, listen to the show. You guys got a lot of things planned. I saw the schedule, so looking forward to a great show. I'm going to let you guys take back over.
Sounds good.
Sweet.
Yeah, we do have an action-packed show tonight. So the absolute dominance this weekend by Martin Truex Jr., it really, Taz, I think you said it best earlier this week, it really left us with not much to talk about. I mean, other than Martin Truex Jr., I give my apologies. I admit when I'm wrong. I threw this guy down the bus and said, look, you know, he's not going to be worth a darn. Cole Pern was the whole reason why this guy was a champion. Obviously, if he was that talented of a race car driver, we would have known him a lot sooner than 10 years into his career. I was wrong. Okay, I stand here today, and I stand corrected. Martin Truex Jr. is badass, and the guy knows how to win races.
I think he's kind of – he's hitting his peak into the career, and Bernard Tyrrell kind of was a major part of that. And with him being a part of Bernard Tyrrell, he had no teammate to rely on, so he could build – his character in a sense, which Mike Joy said numerous times, he's just quiet. Or if it wasn't Mike Joy, then it was Jeff Gordon. But one of the commentators said that, and he's just a quiet guy. But when it comes to on track, he knows that the job is on the line, and he's got to either succeed at it, and he doesn't. And when he does succeed at it, it's remarkable. And the guy can drive straight up. Regardless of who he
proved,
on top of the box.
He proved that this weekend. And, you know, I mean, I expected the guy to win two races outside of Cole Pern, you know. I mean, and that's because Joe Gibbs is a strong enough organization to win that. The way I look at it right now is Martin Truex Jr. has to be the favorite going into the championship. Of course, we're still waiting on Denny Hamlin to win. Kyle Busch is finally in the winner's circle. Still waiting on Kevin Harvick to win. You know, I think this weekend really showed the struggles of SHR. And the fact that Harvick has even been able to put together the season he's been able to put together versus what the other cars have struggled and looked like. Of course, two of the SHR cars were taken out before the end of the race. Cole Custer custered the wall, and Eric Amarola.
Double-A battery charged for the wall.
Yeah, well, Ricky Stenhouse took care of old Eric Amarola. And, you know, you can hear the disappointment in Eric's voice. He knows that his time and a good ride is coming to an end, I believe, and very quickly. I don't foresee Stuart Haas Racing re-signing him. I hope that they can keep the sponsorship, you know, with Smithfield, because the last thing you want to see is sponsorship troubles in a dominant race team. Supposed to be a dominant race team, but I think it's very critical that Stuart Haas Racing goes out and signs a veteran race car driver that's either won a championship or been close to a championship. And when you start looking at the who's left out there, you know, coming up on a contract here, the very top of the list, the name that should be number one, of course, is Brad Keselowski. That I think keeping him in a Ford would be very important. He does have one win in a bow tie. He has one win in a bow tie. But the rest of his career, he has been a Ford man. And, of course, you know, I have no shame in my game. I'm a Ford guy. I would like to see him stay in the Ford camp. And if he can't be at Stuart Haas Racing, I mean at Penske Racing, I'd love to see him with a Kevin Harvick duo over at Stuart Haas. So, you know, obviously a good weekend for all three series to race. The Xfinity race, I believe, Taz, was the most entertaining. The truck race had a big one.
Yeah, that was weird. I mean, I saw glimpses of the truck race. I haven't caught up with the Xfinity, but the truck race wasn't bad, but the big one kind of surprised me, and I just believe that the leaders just were not going while everyone else behind them was just kind of like, let's get a move on, green's out, come on. And I don't know if they may have spun the tires or they just couldn't go as quickly as everyone else. It's kind of hard to tell. All you can see is that the leaders weren't going. Everyone else was trying to go. And unfortunately, when that kind of thing happens, you're going to ask for a big wreck. And that's what we got. It's unfortunate for all those involved, but I guess that's just a part of racing. And the one thing I can say for this weekend overall is that with the truck race being at night, sadly, Xfinity and Cup didn't get the same night race for being throwback weekend. And I have to say, if you're doing throwback racing, you have to do it under lights. You can do day into night, fine with that, as long as you still have primarily night race. But I didn't. Something about running throwbacks under the day was like, yeah, kind of cool, but a lot of them pop better under the lights.
Yeah. I think that this was all rushed. I did not like the fact that we moved the throwback race from the Southern 500. The whole point of throwback was that it was the Southern 500. We're going back to tradition. So this isn't tradition here, and I don't know why they decided that this was the race to do throwback, because obviously it's the race on Labor Day weekend that was the Southern 500 for decades upon decades, and it created, when they went back to that time frame, that's where the throwback come from? So they've taken a tradition and absolutely made a mockery of it, I guess, to just try to have better paint schemes or something. I'm not sure. I didn't dig it. I think all three races should have been run at night, as you said, Taz. And, you know, unfortunately, we just did not get a very entertaining cup race out of it. I think that that's what we're left disappointed with more than anything is the lackluster performance from the cup cars. It was really, I mean, other than Kyle Larson splitting the needle there in three wide, on a track like Darlington where you don't see that very often, that was about as entertaining as it got on the cup side. Of course, I was on the edge of my seat. I was hoping that Larson would track down Truex and give us a late, you know, I'm thinking in my head, oh, this is going to be Ricky Craven and who was it? Kurt Busch, you know, for the end, we're going to have side by side door to door. And you know, Kyle Larson, boy. And it just never really happened like that. So by the time the race is over with, Kyle Larson was 2.5 seconds back. So
I think what made the race a snooze fest, and this is where the broadcast itself kind of fails in a way, is like they focus so much on like the front runners. But the problem was all race long was that Truex was just out in left field. And he had at least a 10 to 15 second lead on second and third. And it was just like they kept on focusing more on that, but it was just like, why aren't you focusing on some of these other battles behind him? Like, if you want to show, if there's a battle for, say, like, three-car battle for 30th place, even though they're two laps down, I would rather watch that than try to watch Truex just lap the field or watch everyone else trying to catch him. I want to see action. But I think that's where the broadcast kind of fails. Everyone's saying it's the package, and I don't think the package is a problem. I think the problem what makes some of these races a snooze fest, while you have the leader dominating doing what he does, stop focusing more on him and focus on somebody else battling for position. And I think that's where the snooze fest kind of comes in a way. Now, because I was kind of watching the race here and there, because, I mean, at times where they were like, oh, Truex lapping the field, or Truex is doing this, or, and I'm like, I kind of don't care. I'm like, I want to see something else.
Where's the product at, right?
And then when Larson started, and then when I noticed Larson making moves towards the front, and he was consistently doing something that nobody else was doing, and that's keeping Truex on like that fishing line and saying you can go out a certain distance, but you're going to come right back. I guess you could say kind of like one of those retracting dog leashes. And he had Truex under one of those retracting dog leashes. Like, I'll let you go for a bit. And then when he wanted to hit the button to reel him in, he would squeeze that button and bring him on back. And up until, what was it? With like 10 laps to go when he got in his tail, I think Larson kind of lost everything that he had left in the tank for what the car had to offer him. But when Larson was catching him, I was like, hey, now we got ourselves a race now for the lead. I'm actually entertaining it.
Yeah, and this is a Goodyear issue. You know, Goodyear gives a good enough tire where it doesn't pop, but the tire is only good for 25, 30 laps, and then it wears out. But the tire doesn't give out. It doesn't give out completely. It just, all the goods ran out of it. So you've seen those who had fresher tires at times. They could zoom. I mean, it was, you know, you didn't want to get caught without the fresher tires on throughout the whole race. And what happened there, you know, he used up his stuff, and we didn't get a late caution like Darlington normally has. And just, you know, he reeled him in, and he couldn't. One thing that Kyle Larson lacks, and I've seen this once before, Taz. I watched it in the early career of Kyle Busch. When Kyle Busch first started, boy, that kid could make a race car do things that just made your jaw drop. But when it come down to closing the race out, that's where he had problems at. And I think that Kyle Larson has the same issue. And we think, well, Kyle Larson's been around for quite a few years. You know, has he not figured that out? No, he's not, because he's never been in the type of equipment that he's in today. One thing that we forget about Kyle Busch was he started out in the best of equipment with the best team NASCAR had had at that time, which was Hendrick Motorsports. So, you know, Kyle Busch come up to the cup level in a very, very fast race car. And at times did not know how to close. He did not know how to finish the race. And we're seeing this right now with Kyle Larson. So if we've seen Busch be able to turn it into what he's turned into, it is scary to think what type of driver Kyle Larson is going to be in the next couple of years. Move over Chase Elliott. I know Chase probably feels like, you know, big boss man in the office there, you know, did him dirty, but you don't in racing, you don't miss out on having a guy like Kyle Larson in your stable. That's what was so messed up about everything that happened in the past year with Kyle Larson, was the fact that this kid was destined to be in this ride, and he just had to take the long way around to get it. I've had people argue me for days upon days and months upon months and even years upon years on this here radio show, saying that Kyle Larson was not ever going to race at Hendrick Motorsports, and he did, and he had to go the long way around to do it and move over. We've seen how dominant he is in a sprint car. We've seen how dominant he is in a midget race car. You don't hear Tony Stewart winning all the dang races that he's in every weekend in his sprint car. You don't hear, you know, Tony Stewart getting out of a damn sprint car and jumping in a late model and finishing second in the World of Outlaws. You don't hear Ricky Stenhouse do that. You don't hear Casey Kane do that. That's how talented this race car driver is. Kyle Larson is a talented son of a bitch as they come. And I got one more thing, because I know we've got a guest coming on in just a second here. The Xfinity race. If I was Josh Berry, I would have put Al Gear to the wall. Al Gear has lived in a good Xfinity ride for 5 years, Josh Berry. For 5 years, this guy's rode around in a Cadillac. Josh Berry, you've been down in the slums racing late models. I ain't calling late model racers slums, but, you know, follow me here as I paint this picture, okay? So Josh Berry has been busting his ass in the minor leagues of racing. And then he gets the opportunity to go to Junior Motorsports. You know Justin Allgaier was going to race you the way that he was going to race you. But the reason that you didn't wreck him, Josh Berry, is because you're afraid that it's going to spoil your next opportunity. But I thought that, you know, if you didn't finish, if you didn't win the race, at least you finished in the top three. He finished in the top three. I believe he got somebody got down there at the last. But when Allgaier made that pass, Josh Berry should have thought about what he, because look, Justin, he's lived out a good career in the minor league, in the, you know, Xfinity series. He's got a championship with Junior Motorsports. Josh Berry, if you want to be in that ride next year, then I think the best thing for you to have done was to move Justin Allgaier. And it's not because I picked you in my fantasy league, but that probably had a lot to do with it.
The one thing I want to point out with the Xfinity race is that Gregson obviously got DQ'd. That kind of hurts him, still with the bad luck going. He, you know, with that takes him out of the eligibility to go for the next Dash to Cash race, which I believe is this weekend at Dover. I believe it's the final one. He would have won three in a row for Dash for Cash, but he got DQ'd, and it's unfortunate. And Gregson, while he's highly aggressive, he's got some driving talent, but this year just not his luck at all.
No, not at all. Not at all. And you know, bad luck shows its ugly head once again. I believe I had him for the Dash for the cash, and that would have given me extra bonus points if he had gotten that. So I'm of course disappointed as well. I think that you know, Junior Motorsports is going to push the issue until Noah Gresden can get into victory lane, and that's what they got caught doing this time. You know, pushing the limits, I guess, so to speak. But definitely the Xfinity race was far more exciting to watch than the Cup race. And, you know, the Xfinity series, whether it be the composite bodies where they can just bounce off the walls and keep on going. We've seen what would happen with just a little bit of a tire rub there at Darlington in the Cup cars. And that's something that I think with this new the next generation car that we're going to, you know, we're going to the days of age of, you know, dropping your tire because you scraped the wall a little bit or got into somebody's fender a little bit. I hope those days are over with. That's something that I would not necessarily miss. I'm going to miss seeing five lug nuts on the ground when they take off, but I'm not going to miss the dented fenders that pop tires and you know, ruin people's day. I mean, that, you know, those Xfinity cars were bouncing off the wall and they were still able to keep on going. That's what it's all about. So, like I said in my opening dialogue, Taz, I don't know if people enjoy the wrecks or not, but what I consider an exciting race is when I can see multiple restarts. I would much rather see that restart with maybe a pop tire or a blown motor than I would a wreck, but it's definitely more exciting when you have those restarts, right? I mean, you got guys side by side, they're taking off, they're going to give everything they got, and so when the race gets like what you said with the Cup race, where you know you got, you know, Martin Truex is 14 second lead on the whole field, that race is not very entertaining. So you want a caution, you want to see the field stacked back up. I think we would have had a different outcome had we had a late caution there.
But I don't mind if a driver dominates a race. My thing is, when it comes to broadcasting it, and this is where watching a race on TV and watching a race live is two different things. Like, when you watch it on TV, you're expecting, like, good product, okay? The problem with what we're getting on TV that we're missing in some of these races is that the broadcasters are doing so much on the front runners. And if you have a driver like Truex that dominated last night, having a clinic of a race, making the field like they're standing still and he's on rails, it makes the race boring when you're focusing on him. Like, put it on somebody that's battling for fifth, or if there's a three-car battle for 25th, and those guys are all two laps down, and they're fighting to stay two laps down. Like, I'm okay with that. Like, towards the end, after Kyle Larson just gave it all, they're saying, oh, look, Tyler Reddick and Ryan Newman are battling to stay on the lead lap. Like, it's like, okay, cool. Truex is coming up to them, but now we have a product here, because now not only is Truex catching up to them and trying to figure out how to get around them, knowing that Kyle Larson's close by, but you're seeing Tyler Reddick and Ryan Newman slice and dice for not only position, but to stay in the lead lap. Like, that's product.
Yeah,
that's what I want to see. And, of course, when you watch a race live, you're watching anything that you see. Like, for me, for instance, like, I'm an official, so, like, I'm going to, like, keep my eyes open everywhere, but I'm also going to watch where the race is at. So, like, So at Fondo, if Stuart Friesen is there and he gets the lead, you can kiss that one goodbye, because Stuart Friesen's usually gone on a clinic like Truex did this past weekend. But I'm going to watch a battle for like third or fourth between two guys who are in pretty decent equipment but have no match for Stewie. And I would rather watch that than watch the leader just take off and have a rocket ship day.
So a guy who's been on a hell of a streak as well, I think that's not gotten very much publicity, is William Byron's 10 top 10 finishes in a row. The guy is Mr. Consistency right now. And I think Mike Joy nailed most of the broadcast, Taz. Like you said, he nailed most on the throwbacks. He was he was on it, man. He knew, you know, each paint scheme and what it was for. But Clint and Jeff Gordon, this was the broadcast where they didn't really gel too well together. Clint was basically, I guess there's been some backroom to talk between Jeff and Clint, and Jeff Gordon's tried to make Clint Bowyer a little insecure, playing head games with him or something, maybe making him feel a little insecure about how he's calling races and stuff. And it just seemed that they were a little bit off cue this weekend. But there again, Mike Joy is most of the time the guy that's off cue. My takeaway from this race was this was Mike Joy's one good weekend because he really made the broadcast enjoyable, knowing each of the, especially the story about Marty Robbins in that paint scheme on the 8 car that I believe was Tyler Reddick. that the car was painted those colors, and the reason why. Did y'all get that? Did y'all hear the story on that?
Which one is this?
The Marty Robbins paint scheme, the Tyler Reddick throwback. The purple or pink or whatever and yellow.
Oh, yeah. I remember
Mike Joy said,
car,
why did you have those two
story.
Colors together? Those are about the two ugliest colors in the world. And Marty Robbins said, look, I only do this part-time and I only come to the plate races, so I want to make sure that any driver that's coming up to me knows who the hell I am. So, in other words, don't have any expectations and be very careful because this is the car of the guy that doesn't really belong out here but has a good time doing it. And I thought that was a pretty hilarious story given by Mike Joy. And I looked through the news thread, Taz, and I just really – update on the guests, that we have not had a guest come into the studio, so we'll keep on rolling with this segment as we get closer to the Dirt Talk segment coming up at the top of the hour. Still no word from Craig Moore.
He might have gotten
technical problems from last week.
Something.
Yeah, he wasn't in the best of mood earlier today either, so... But hopefully he'll get him some rest, and we'll hear from him next week. So, Kaz Grala, obviously he had a good run. Do you know about that good run? Or I guess that was the Kellogg team, right?
Grala races for Colleague, I believe. I know
right.
the Cup full time, and I think he's
Colleague.
Yeah, and I believe if I remembered right, he's racing the remainder of the Colleague Cup races that they're scheduled to race, except for one. I don't remember which one it is. It might be a road course that Allmendinger might be driving in.
So I don't know if we've even talked much about them going Cup racing, but they are scheduled to go Cup racing next year. I believe I might have said it already, but I think A.J. Allmendinger, without a doubt, would be the guy to put into that race car. If for by chance you do go Cup racing, it is still in the talks of Junior Motorsports possibly going Cup racing in 2022. It's very doubtful, I believe, that this will happen. I think that Junior will partnership with somebody and eventually tie into a charter system with a developmental driver, possibly a Josh Berry, giving him a couple of Cup starts. Similar to the way Tommy Baldwin Racing used to be ran when they wanted a driver like Ron Blaney, who had brought a little bit of funding, got his debut with Tommy Baldwin Racing. I don't know if anybody remembers that. Actually, Ron Blaney started his Cup career, with Tommy Baldwin Racing, along with Alex Bowman, I believe. Alex Bowman was one of the Tommy Baldwin's project kids as well. The underdog, once again, this past weekend was a fight between Daniel Suarez. No, it wasn't Bubba Wallace. So we said Bubba Wallace's name one time. We should get a round of applause. There it is. Yeah, there's a round of applause. We said his name, right? I mean, we get brownie points for that, right? I mean, I hope we get brownie points for that. So, But definitely the underdog of the race was between Daniel Suarez and Erik Jones. I think Erik Jones had a pretty good run. I think he's doing a lot with a lot less. But also, Daniel Suarez had a hell of a run as well. As a matter of fact, a few times we've seen him break the top 10 in this race.
Yeah.
Do you have any comments on either one of those?
We can comment on this for a bit before we get into want to touch brief on another series with some news that came out in the past week too. But and also next gen if we want to top that one as well. Suarez, I think the alliance for Trackhouse with RCR is paying dividends. We all thought, he may be a mid-tier team because RCR is mid-tier. And I have said this numerous times. RCR, after our Cup veterans left there, was kind of on a slump. Austin Dillon was the next young guy to come in. And I think with him paired up to a veteran, and nothing against Ryan Newman, I just think Ryan Newman right now is kind of on a downhill for the end of his career, and it's just a matter of when is he going to actually end it. I think for Austin, he kind of needed someone that has the same drive as him. And we tried Daniel Hemric, and Hemric, I don't think, was just ready for it. And so we got Tyler Reddick. And obviously Reddick, with two Xfinity Cup titles and how hungry he is to run well week in, week out, regardless if it's a win or not, Tyler Reddick's got drive, and he's got the urgency to get up there. And Austin Dillon now has the urgency to compete now and run with Tyler Reddick in there. So I think with those two, and of course Daniel Suarez finally getting something for himself, it's kind of paying dividends for Trackhouse. So Suarez running pretty well is actually it's great to finally see him get to where I think a lot of people expected him to be. I just think he got rushed in need of time. And in terms of Erik Jones, we knew he had the talent. The problem was Joe Gibbs and Toyota had so much young talent lined up. It was just a matter of who are they getting rid of and when, because we all knew Christopher Bell was coming up. And when Bell took over Levine's 95, it was only a matter of time that Bell was going to hop into Joe Gibbs' car. And unfortunately, Erik Jones is the one that got the boot because the other three were doing their jobs to Gibbs' expectations.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So Erik Jones with the 43 right now, he's doing a lot better than I would say he's doing better that in the 43 that we have seen since maybe Almirola was in it, but I think Jones may be outperforming in the 43 now than when Almirola was in that 43.
Yes, this was a top 25 car with Bubba Wallace, and possibly go back as far as Eric Almirola. Maybe Eric Almirola was more in the top 20 side, maybe top 22 side, I believe. But what Erik Jones has done is he's put this car in the top 20 week in, week out, and that's you know, you look at Tyler Reddick, the best finishing car out of the RCR stable, with a 12th place finish. Then Austin Dillon with 16th place finish. Erik Jones with 18th place finish, and Daniel Suarez a 23rd place finish. Which I think something happened on a pit stop or something that got Suarez's team back behind the ball again. I expected it to be a little bit better finished than what they actually finished with. I'm not sure if it was mechanical or what happened there. He finished two laps. I guess he finished three laps down. So something happened there. He was six cars away from me. So even Matt Diamandetto, who finished 19th, was still damn near three laps down. Matter of fact, the only people that finished on the lead lap or the top 11 cars. We can talk about Buescher and Ryan Newman because those guys have done a lot of good with Les this year. Our Roush is finally digging themselves out of a deep hole. But I do want to mention something about Tyler Reddick because you mentioned him as well. This guy went to an organization that hadn't seen any success in a very long time other than, you know, a fuel mileage win by Austin Dillon and a Daytona 500 win that was, you know, he had to dump Eric Amarola to get it. Tyler Reddick has made this team competitive. Week in, week out, we talk about Tyler Reddick. And nobody seems to realize that this kid is only in his second year at the Cup level. Tyler is a handful of talent, and I
also
cannot
got
wait to see.
Also got rookie of the year.
Yeah, no doubt. Cole Custer got the win, so, you know, he was. But, you know, look, we all know Dale Jr. had a better rookie season than Matt Kenseth, too, right? You know, Matt Kenseth got a win. Dale Jr., I think, got one win. I know he won the All-Star race, but I think a win at Texas was Dale Jr.'s only win. Matt Kenseth may have come up with two wins or something. We know Dale Jr. was the better driver that year. But, you know, sometimes the favorites, it's some weird point system that they have with Rookie of the Year. I think NASCAR should have fixed that years ago. If they finish ahead of them in the standings, then they should definitely be the Rookie of the Year. But Alex Bowman had a hell of a tough race. Was not expecting that. Was actually expecting a lot better finish from him. But surprise, surprise, here we are, Roush Racing. We buried them. We put the dirt on top of them. And out of nowhere, this year has not been too bad of a year for Roush Fenway Racing. Maybe just the rest of the competition stinks that much worse. What is it, Taz? Is it that Childress and Roush are getting better? Or is it really the fact that mostly from 20th on back, those cars are pretty damn pathetic?
I think it's a little bit of both. Buescher all had success with Roush in the Xfinity days. I think it just took him a little bit. I think it just took him a year to kind of adjust to JTG Chevy and going back to Roush Ford. So it just give him a year to adjust. Newman's been there for a bit. We all know Ryan Newman. We've seen what he can and can't do. And in terms of RCR, they just needed to find the right drivers for them, and they have it now with Reddick hopping in. I think Austin Dillon coming in for RCR is a good move, but I think they just needed a second young talent urgency that was needed to help the team rejuvenate itself, and Reddick was that guy. So, and of course, a lot of the teams in the back, of course, they're going to be like, and I don't mean any harm to these teams at all. I mean, they're working with what they have for as much money as they have. Teams, for the most part, like Rick Ware, fielding 3-4 cars a week. They always sit in the back of the pack. You have Spire, with the 77 car, not the strongest equipment car. Corey LaJoy trying to make the best of what he can in that second car. And I know Spire's all in on Corey LaJoy because obviously the 77 car is basically for drivers needing to get their feet wet in the Cup Series. And then you have the MBM and the Gaunt Brothers teams. And it just comes down, and I don't think that for a second they don't have the drivers they don't have the driving talent in the cars. It's just a matter of they don't have the money to be running up there with everyone else because they don't have as much money as everyone else. And that's not to anyone's doing, it's just how
Right. You there? Did we lose you? Taz? Taz Taylor. And to further his point, my goodness. I wonder where he went. He has fallen out of the studio. So we have lost Taz Taylor. All right. There he is. He's back.
Hello?
Yeah, I got you back in there.
All right. But, yeah, it's just where the funding comes in and stuff like that. So it's not the driver talent because we all see, I mean, I know not a lot of people watch it, but for those that do, if you watch the iRacing stuff, think of it this way. The sim racing that they have on there and how the cars are originally set up, everyone's basically on the same level. And we're seeing the Rick Ware Racing. We're seeing the MBM guys running up front that we're not used to seeing on the real track. So obviously they can run up there. It's just a matter of when it comes to the real life thing, they don't have the proper equipment to run as fast as everyone else.
Right. And I think that the next gen car, this generational car that's coming out will shorten that gap, so to speak. And I hope that it does. I hope, you know, if Rick Ware is going to invest into this next generation car, that they have, you know, they're able to get all the parts that it needs to be competitive each week. I'm not saying that they're just going to all of a sudden start showing up with top five cars every weekend, but you know, the day and age of seeing Ken Schrader finish, you know, a top five or top 10, or Bill Davis Racing, you know, a car that gets a win occasionally, even, you know, Richard Petty. I mean, they talked a lot about the Don Andretti Martins will win this past weekend. You know, back then, those cars that were not necessarily the top dogs, they did have certain races where there was a chance. Even Kyle Petty was able to win a few races in his career, right? We just don't see that these days, and we don't see races that lead to an unexpected winner. It basically, as I've found in my fantasy league, it's really the top 12 drivers. If you're going to win, you're going to be within that top 12 range. If not, then it's going to take a Talladega or possibly a road course to get you there. And these days, you could put the most talented road course guy in a car, and I'm just not sure if he has what it takes to win based off of what these cup cars that have plenty of funding, what they have in their car. Obviously, better brake systems, better setups, better books to work from, you know, data sheets and stuff. You know, if you were to have all 40 cars competitive amongst each other, Taz Taylor, we would have a damn near perfect racing league, and I just don't see that's going to actually be possible. Corey LaJoie, you mentioned his name. He got a 22nd place finish. Not too shabby for Corey LaJoie. And as you said, I believe their second team is just kind of a way to help fund the first team a little bit better. But you said that you had a couple of things that you wanted to get into real quick, Taz.
Yeah, I know in a few minutes we're going to have Kyle Dingman come on at 9 o'clock for about 10-15 minutes here as we come up to our local racing segment. And then about 9:15 we're going to have Chris's special guest come on for about 10-15 minutes as well, talk about some racing down south. And then we can touch base on it before we get our picks in for within the last 10-15 minutes of the show. SRX has announced their race format for this summer and their point structure. They're going to run essentially two heat races and a feature race, so kind of does their local short track flair in there. With someone mentioned earlier this year to the press that they're looking into more of a kind of like a timed endurance race in a way. Well, that's their heat races, two 15-minute 15-minute heat races. And, of course, the feature race will be 100 laps. Or the only race that will be more than 100 laps is at Slinger. That's 150 laps. The leader will get the white flag next time by, and that'll end the heat race. We'll get into more further details and stuff like that after our local half-hour segment. But like I said, they have some short-track flair coming in. Right now, as far as we still know of, they have 11 cars with drivers. A 12th car, we don't know who's in it, but everyone kind of sees the photos and media things in the background with the Biff, Greg Biffle. But, of course, they haven't announced that yet. They've announced Haley Deegan, but I would assume Haley Deegan will be driving the local racers, the local racer all-star, whatever you want to call that, car for Nashville, being that the series has announced their local driver for each track except for Nashville. So I want to believe that Haley Deegan will probably be racing in the Nashville race for that squadron. And, of course, this 12th car, we have no clue of who the driver is, but we're pretty confident it could be Greg Biffle.
Greg Biffle was in the broadcast this past weekend. I think we missed that on the Truck Series side. And did we say who won the truck race?
I believe it was Sheldon Creed.
I don't even remember who won. Sheldon Creed.
I believe Sheldon Creed won the truck race.
Who also threw off Marcus Lemonis for a low ball offer, basically $15,000 to put Camping World on the side of the race truck. He denied sponsorship to Marcus, saying that they were not going to put themselves at a lower standard, being that they have such a good race truck. The GMS is struggling. They need sponsorship help, and I'm not sure for how much longer GMS is going to be able to build these race trucks without proper funding coming in. It is tough to turn away sponsorship, but if Marcus is preying on those who are weak for free publicity or for, you know, bottom dollar publicity, then I think that will backfire eventually on Marcus. And that text or that post that I shared, the tweet, Dev, how did you react to that, Taz? I mean, do you think that there's some possibly lowballing going on here with Marcus, or do you think that, you don't put all your eggs in one basket, right? I mean, if you're having to pay $15,000 here and $15,000 there and $15,000 there, well, yeah, you know, basically he is forking out a large amount of sponsorship money, but it's just been cut into enough pieces for everybody to have. What do you think after you read that tweet? What was your reaction to that?
I'll get this in quick, and we're hoping maybe Kyle Dingman's called in here in the studio. All right, so I'll get this in quick, and then we'll get Kyle in. Lemonis, I don't think he's really lowballing anything. I think he's just helping drivers without sponsorship, you know, get sponsorship out there. $15,000 is $15,000. I mean, a lot of these drivers are going to take it, but for Sheldon Creed coming off a championship season, I kind of understand in a way why he doesn't want $15,000. Like, he feels like he's worth more than that. And like I said, coming off championship season, I kind of feel for the guy. I mean, if you're only going to offer $15,000 after I came off a championship season, I think that's a little bit of a low ball pay. But for the most part, I mean, a lot of these drivers are saying, okay, well, $15,000 gets a sponsorship. I don't have to worry about sponsorship now for the race, which is very helpful and great.
Right. Right.
But if you're going to go up to caliber drivers like Sheldon Creed, you're going to have to pay a little bit more than a dime.
Or give them $15,000 worth of sponsorship, whether that be on the tailgate or what, you know, whatever. But, you know, basically not wrapping the whole truck in a Camping World Truck Series paint scheme. But we're going to move right along. We would normally take a break here for sponsorship reasons, but we're gonna skip that break and we're going to bring in our guest, Taz Taylor. If you'll introduce our guest and tell us a little bit about what's going on.
Yeah, so this past weekend at Fonda Speedway, another week of racing action, and our guest for the next 10, at most 15 minutes we have is a first-time winner at Fonda Speedway. He won his first race in the Unlimited Sportsman Division. Last year he was the track champion for the Senior Wing Champs at Caroga Creek Race Park. And we are glad to welcome in Kyle Dingman. Kyle, do we have you there, bud?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right. Well, Kyle, it seemed like I wasn't there Saturday due to some Mother's Day plan for the weekend, but I was watching the live score there, and you seemed to put on a clinic during the feature. It was over 8 second lead. Kind of progress of how that race went before we kind of get into your career a bit.
Yeah, you know, we started second on the outside pole. We took the lead coming down the front stretch going into one, and it was pretty much never looked back from there. You know, we had the car dialed in really good. It was really fast. It handled well. And honestly, the whole time, I didn't even know I had that big of a lead. I was just pedaling coming to take the white flag, we ended up getting a puff of white smoke, and we blew a radiator hose in half and ended up losing a motor, but I would take the win over a motor any day of the week.
Now, this is your second year of big car racing, am I right?
Yeah, I got about 13 races in last year with the weird season we had with the COVID and stuff. We had six total limited races, though, at Fonda last year. So we're kind of up to about 10 races now with the limited class at Fonda, and we ran one regular sportsman race last year at Fonda, and then the one race we didn't qualify for at the end of the year. So we're still kind of limited with experience, but we're starting to pick things up pretty quick.
Now, last year being your first year, was there any real expectations, or were you just kind of going for the ride, see what you had and kind of go from there? What was that kind of like?
When we first got the car, you know, we didn't really pinpoint any expectations. It was a whole completely different ball game. And then about halfway through the season, when we were, you know, inside the top five in points, you know, we were like, oh, wow, you know, like when we had some good runs, and towards the end of the year, you know, our expectations started to pick up some, and we were close to winning over at Malta once. And then, like I said, we were sitting in the top five in points at Fonda, and we ended up coming home third in points at Fonda last year for our first year. So that was pretty cool, and with no expectations really behind us on, you know, you got to go out and win, or we kind of just learned as we went slowly, and, you know, we started at the rear to try not to be in anyone's way, and, you know, we just learned from the back and just picked up things and learned as we went.
Going from after having our season that you say you had last year, obviously you ran carts on top of the big car, and I'm pretty sure that was pretty busy for you, but what kind of expectations after running last year, given the number of races you ran because of the COVID, what kind of expectations were you looking at this year? Was at least a win in the drawing book to accomplish this year? Like, what are some of the things you're looking forward to NAB for 2021 that you have already accomplished or you're looking at accomplishing, but you're working towards that?
You know, coming into the season, we kind of had a couple expectations. You know, we wanted to get the first win out of the way. You know, and since, like, now, we after this past weekend, we had jumped up into fourth in points. I think we're like 22 points out of the points lead now. And I feel like our expectations are rising, but at the same time, I'm going to just keep a level head and just keep working in and out, you know, week after week, and hopefully the results show.
And you're looking at racing Utica Rome as well on Friday night?
Yeah. We're planning on running Utica right now with, you know, blowing up a motor. I'm actually really appreciative of having someone lend me a motor to use until we're actually able to replace our motor. But I'm really appreciative for that. I couldn't even thank that guy enough for what he did. And but we'd like to still try and run Utica on Friday nights. I mean, we might miss the first couple weeks now, seeing that we're going to be waiting for our own personal motor. So I don't really want to use up someone's motor more than I have to already. And but I'm sure we'll be out to Utica in a few weeks. We'd still like to try and run over at Albany Saratoga a night or two. We really enjoyed the atmosphere over there, and it was a really nice racetrack to race on. We have Glenridge in mind. I mean, we have a couple of different tracks, you know, maybe towards the end of the year, just as, you know, just to go get some more racing in. But as of right now, we're kind of fully focusing on Fonda at this point. Then we would definitely like to add in Utica back into our program here in the next couple of weeks. But other than that, we're just waiting to get our own personal motor again.
Well, Kyle, I'm glad you came on. Before we let you go, do you want to plug in any sponsors you got to thank and everyone else that's helped you get up to where you are?
Definitely. I got to thank all my sponsors, Early Birds Diner, E&J General Contracting, Foxtrot RC Park, James Wells, Fastline Performance, Bottle Tops and Can Drops, N3 Motorsports, my crew. They're down working in the shop right now, getting this other motor in the car. My uncle, my cousin, and my buddy Colin. So, you know, that's always good to have, you know, people willing to help at any time. These guys have really stuck through. I mean, we've had a pretty tough going the first few weeks this year, blowing up in practice and stuff. So it's really cool to have these guys stick by me through these times. And we're going to keep pushing forward. Yeah, I got to thank my mom and my dad for all their support. My stepdad, Mark, he helps out a ton. Chad Edwards, Rocky Warner, for all their setup advice and, you know, just me nitpicking their brain about certain things. And there's so many people behind it, and I'm just so thankful for it all.
Well, Kyle, again, thank you for coming on. Congrats on that first win, and hopefully we'll try to get you back on for maybe something like this again, see how your season turned out towards the end, and hopefully more wins and more success comes out of it.
Thank you, Taz. I really appreciate that.
All righty. Chris, do we have you back on here, bud?
Yeah, that's me. I'm here. Awesome. Good deal. Really enjoyed that part of the segment. So this past weekend, we were at Why Not Motorsports Park in the 604 late model class. Monte Skinner come out. He won his heat race, and boy, in dominant fashion. He got the pole, won the heat race, and in dominant fashion, the red-headed stepchild from Saraland, Alabama, took home the win in a 00 capital race car. Jamie Boland had a great run. He finished, I believe, second in the field. So this was supposed to be event information. In the 602 series, back in victory lane, the Old Man Motorsports, Bill Moffitt Motorsports, the number 87 driven by Why Not's very own Tody Ratcliffe, found his way into victory lane. Of course, this is the 602 Crate Racing USA Sportsman late model class with a steel-headed 300 horsepower Chevy block motor. aluminum steel-headed block, I should say. So, that was the 602s, I believe, a close second-place finish. Don't hold me on that one. I can't really remember. On the street stock side, boy, oh, boy, Lee Ray had a very interesting race, very aggressive in the first part of the race. I feel like he probably knew that he was at fault with the contact made with Matt Byram that put Matt Byram, that sent him into the wall very hard. But Lee Ray did not get called on the caution, was able to retain the lead even after falling back at the back of the field. The call was not made, so he got his spot back, which is something that's controversial in our neck of the woods. I don't believe in getting your spot back if you're in an incident. I believe that if you were involved in an incident, you should go to the rear. No fault is always my favorite. I do not like the fault rule. But that's me. So Lee Ray was able to take home the victory in the street stock side. The factory stock side was a hell of a battle between three cars. Brett Etheridge, Blake McNeil, and Chris Reeves. Chris Reeves and the Alan Green special was able to come home for his second victory in a row, but it was not without controversy. There was a wreck on the last lap up in turn four, I believe, by, I don't want to call the wrong name, a car that was not in contention, spun out up in turn four. As the checkered flag was coming out, there was a side-by-side, door-to-door battle between Chris Reeves in the 420 car and Blake McNeil in that Project X number three. Of course, Blake McNeil backed out of the gas. Chris Reeves took home the victory, giving him two in a row, two wins for the season. In the hot shot class, we didn't have the four cars in Hatfield. Well, there was still no McCoy. So Blake Hatfield in the 00 out of Selma, Alabama, come home victorious in the hot shot four-cylinder class. We need some guys, some more guys showing up. Also, in kind of a short field of cars, we had six cars for our open-wheel modified class, but I tell you what, the story of the race was young gun Chase Holland, fresh back from Bristol, Tennessee. This kid's been racing a couple of years in the modified class, but this time when he showed up at the House of Hook, he knew what he was doing. All night long, we were waiting to see if cars would go up to the top and race the hook the way it's supposed to be raced. A lot of bottom racing's been going on since we put the new track surface out onto the racetrack. Let me tell you something. Chase Holland has big balls, obviously, because he got up there in the marbles and he made a cushion of his own. He knocked the marbles back even further. He got up on the high side. He hung it out. He looked like he had been winning at that racetrack for a long time. He put a pretty good butt whooping on some darn good cars. In the field was Toby Hodge, Cash Wilson, and Robert Cassada out of Petal, Mississippi. So definitely a hard-fought win. Once again, guys, our stands look pitiful. We need more people. We need more people in the stands. We need more people excited about dirt track racing. But I've got a guy that's coming on right now from Southern Dirt Track Report, and you're talking about a guy who's pumped up about racing, who will get everybody else pumped up about racing. There is nothing more amusing than seeing somebody with a lot of passion. And this guy right here, Jared Hudson, who I've got coming on. Jared, can you hear me?
Yes, sir. What's going on?
Man, waiting on you to come on, man. So this is a new segment that we've kind of started with. This is a continuation of something that we started with Taz Taylor giving us updates about the northern region. Of course, I come on and probably give more of a bitch session than I think I should. So we've decided to integrate and bring in people who are excited about racing and want to talk about it. Obviously, what y'all do over at Southern Dirt Track Report, y'all give a lot of information to a lot of people, and we want to give y'all the same opportunity to do that through the 110 Nation, of course, Race Chat Live. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome Mr. Jared Hudson. Now, thank you. Now, you got a special catchphrase, and I want to hear it, Jared Hudson. What's your special catchphrase? Because this is how we're going to start it out. You're going to keep it what?
Rated R for racing.
Rated R for racing. I love it. Jared Hudson, tell us about where you were at this weekend. Tell us about where you were at this weekend and what all you got to see, man.
So I was at Tri-County Speedway over in the redneck community of Pollard, Alabama, and right outside of Flemington, pretty close to the old Flemington Speedway they shut down, and got to go watch some racing there, and they put on an awesome show over there at Tri-County Speedway. They call it the Swamp. And it was a lot of good racing up there. There a lot of they got several divisions up there. The bomber class, they have this year they started last year they started running the Stinger division, which is the four cylinders. And then let's see, what are the classes? They got UMP modified, 602 Crate Racing USA, 604s. They have straight stock, pure stock, and the junior slingshots, which is the kids division. And the bomber class was the biggest division this weekend. They had so many bomber cars, they had to run two features, an A main and a B main, and they had 20 bombers.
So they split the class up, Jared? They ran 10 and 10?
Yes.
Okay.
What now?
Well, a full field of cars for most of us is 22 cars. I'm not understanding why they ran two separate classes there.
And I didn't really ask, to be honest with you. But it was some good racing. I will say that I've seen the bombers race a lot, and I've never seen, to my knowledge, I don't ever remember seeing 20 cars, and so that was unusual how they did that. And I didn't ask, but
tell us what type of car the bombers are, because that we may be misunderstanding what type of car that is. Is that like a pure street car? Does that have the dual driver that's pushing the gas and the guy who's doing the steering wheel? What class is this?
Well, okay, so the bombers, it started at Tri-County, and some other tracks used to run them, but then they changed it. But the bombers, you go to a junkyard, pick up a car, and it's got to be a Chevrolet 350 or whatever the Ford equivalent is. I guess a Dodge will be a 360 Dodge motor, or Mopar. And then just whatever car that's equivalent to a 350, and then you got your Ford, Crown Vicks, and so forth, your metric cars. And you have to run everything stock except for you can run racing wheels, and everything else has to be stock motor. You can't do a whole lot of upgrades as far as that goes. It's the cheapest and economical class to get into besides a Stinger car.
Wow, and they had 20 cars of these show up.
Yes, and it's whenever Tri-County started it, they started a class about 3 or 4 years ago, something like that. I don't remember the exact date, but they had, for a while there, they had one car. And I'm talking about for three races, they have one car. And then it was two cars for several races. And then by the end of the season, they had about 8 to 10 cars, and they were getting pretty good. And then it just kept building and building and building. And then now the class is so big that they Tri-County Speedway works with Mr. Scott Sessions over at Northwest Florida Speedway. So whenever Tri-County Speedway is not racing, Northwest Florida races, and they try to support each other. And so all the bombers would go to Northwest Florida Speedway and race over there for points. And so the class is really growing, and I encourage anybody who wants to get in the class. It's cheap, economical. I know several drivers that drive in it, and it's a very fun class. I love watching the bombers race. And then one thing cool about Tri-County is when the bombers come out, a lot of times they'll play the Sanford and Son theme song, so that's classic.
Oh, wow.
Because every time, like, I will never forget it, it was several times last year and the year before, the Bomber Classic come out, and you hear over the loudspeaker, you hear the Sanford Sun theme song, and the announcer's like, well, here comes the Bombers.
Right. The old scrap metal pal, huh? Yeah. But, I mean, look, but the fans are entertained by that clash, right? And that's what a lot of racing is missing these days is all the seriousness, all the money being pumped into it. It's similar to what I said about the Blake McNeil and Alan and Chris Reeves incident at Why Not. Chris Reeves is driving a car that he's a driver for a race team, and Blake McNeil is driving a $20,000, factory stock car. Well, the reason why Chris Reeves won is because Blake McNeil didn't want to tear up a $20,000 race car. And so, a lot of times money changes things, and it changes how people race, and it changes the amount of fun that they're having. But this Bomber class, which I didn't know anything about until you come on just now, is obviously something that's gotten the fans excited and the drivers as well.
Yes. And in fact, I've got several pictures of the Bomber cars. One of the guys, the guy I'm friends with, P.J. Dickerson, he drove a Bomber for a while. He had a Ford Crown Vic, and he would go up when they raced him at Deep South Speedway. He would go up there and wax the field because that Ford Crown Vic's got a strong motor in it. And then I know another guy that I love talking to. His name is Thomas Davis, and he drove the Bomber class for 2 years, and he had the old Richard Petty throwback car, had the STP red and blue, and had 43 on the side, and then he won the championship, I believe it was last season at Tri-County. And some of these cars, they'll take them and they'll throw them back to famous drivers. Like one of them was the old Skull Bandit car, and Robert Presley drove it, Harry Gant, and then you had Kenny Schrader drove that paint scheme, so that's really cool to see.
Yeah, and you're a guy that knows a lot about NASCAR, big NASCAR fan yourself, right? And so you've been around tracks here for a few years.
Yes, and I was born into NASCAR. Like, I'm a NASCAR nerd. I watch all the races. And then I got into the dirt track side about 7-8 years ago or something like that. And I've been hooked ever since. And then one of my really good friends, Artie, who runs the Southern Dirt Track Report, asked me after I went to the Hornet's Nest at Little Talladega Short Track, asked me if I would join his team, and I joined his team, and I've been on there ever since, and I love volunteering with dirt track, and then I'm also a photographer too, so I take a lot of photography pictures at races.
And you don't really get much pay for this at all, do you, Jared? You do this for the passion of the sport.
Yes, I do. Because Southern Dirt Track Report's all volunteer. We want to get it to where maybe one day we can have some sponsors and we can do it full-time for a living. That would be awesome. That would be my dream job. But unfortunately, that may not happen. But who knows? You know, it's up to God on that. But yeah, I just love volunteering. And you know, we provide a great service where, like, all our volunteers, everybody has their own strength. Like mine is, I love videoing, but I don't have enough space on my phone, so I just take pictures of my photography camera. And then I'm good at driver interviews and sharing stuff on Facebook because I'm super good on social media. And then some people, you know, may not be good at none of that. Some people may be just good at sharing. And so we're looking for any volunteers at any of the tracks we cover. And if somebody just wants to post the winners for the night, you know, we'd be glad to have that. And then another thing we want to eventually do is already talked about having a magazine for dirt track racing to advertise all the local tracks and upcoming races and stuff.
Right. And Artie does a little bit of videography as well when he goes to races. He proclaimed himself as a Hattiesburg Speedway home tracker. That's right. His home track, and I tell you, I got a lot of love for that little short track down there in Hattiesburg, Mississippi. If it wasn't for Mr. Donald Parker, the whole Southern Dirt Track Report had not even crossed my mind about joining forces and giving y'all an opportunity to be on and expand your leagues. So Mr. Parker is a big time fan of you guys. He was the one that suggested to me that I look into bringing some diversity to the show and a little bit more on the local side, considering that I just stay at Why Not, and that's kind of about as much of an update. But now you go to different tracks and Artie goes to different tracks. Now, are y'all ever at the same track at the same place, or do y'all try to make sure you go to different places?
Sometimes we are, but most of the time we go to different places. Like my tracks I cover is Deep South Speedway and then Tri-County Speedway are my two. And then I also try to help Mr. Scott Sessions up there at Northwest Florida Speedway because I really think highly of him, and I love coming to Why Not, the House of Hook. I love coming there, and I think, you know, Chris is one of the coolest announcers. And then I haven't been to Hattiesburg yet, but I met Donald Parker. He's a super awesome guy. And one of my really good friends is Ron Southern that does the announcing and track chaplain up there. And I like Ron, too. And
I tell you, Hattiesburg got blessed when I left Hattiesburg Speedway as the announcer there. I worked for Donald for 4 years. And fell into economic hard times, as so many people did during that stretch. And I had to basically shut my operation down. And, you know, it was one of the hardest things to walk away from Hattiesburg. But when Ron Southern took that job and has been able to do what he's been able to do with it, I never felt that that I didn't make the right decision. And Ron, of course, given the opportunity, has gone so far with it. And all the respect in the world for what he's able to bring to the table and the skill set that he's brought to the racers and to the fans out of Hattiesburg Speedway. He's done a great, magnificent job. I couldn't have appointed anybody better. Mr. Parker really knows what he's doing down there at Hattiesburg Speedway, guys.
Oh, yeah.
If you haven't been down there, you need to get there and check out some of that racing. And when you pull into the gates, and Jared, I know you've not been there yet, but when you pull into the gates and you see that racetrack, the first thing it does is remind you of what racing used to be like. And you know, just a hole-in-the-wall facility with a track service that brings people far and wide. They love racing on that little bitty short track. That bull ring is what they call it. And it provides great racing. So Tri-County is a little bit of a flat track, right? And Deep South, they've done turn themselves into a super track. Let's go into that real quick before we let you go here, Jared. Tell us a little bit about the two tracks that you go to often and what types of tracks they are and really the types of racing that you get to see there.
So speaking of Tri-County, it used to be super flat, and now they've added banking to it. The Day family is super good people. Isaiah and his dad run it. And then, of course, Isaiah's mom, Marilyn, works there too. And they've added a little bit of banking there, and it's been really, really good racing there this season. And they did it over the off season. And then Deep South Speedway up there, Tara's a race announcer. And then you got Mr. Billy Robertson is the owner. And the track used to be 4/10 mile, and I love big dirt tracks. Big dirt tracks are my favorite. And then they changed the size up to just a little above 3/8 mile. It's still big, but it's not as big as it was. And Mr. Billy went in and put in a whole new surface on the racetrack, and he's done a phenomenal job with that track. And
built a wall, put the lights up. I mean, this is incredible amount of renovation done in a very short period of time. It was, the track was a state-of-the-art facility, but it had already been through so many owners and lack of maintenance and all. It really was not what it is now. Now you walk into it and you think, man, this is damn near a brand new facility.
Oh, yes. And so people could easily think of Tri-County and Deep South, both of them. I might as well just call both of them the Cadillac of dirt tracks because they're two of the finest dirt tracks around. And, like, at Deep South, Miss Billy's done so much work to it. He runs a business called Robertson Excavation, where he does underground excavation and dirt work stuff. So he already knows his dirt stuff and how to work the surface. And the last race they had, I was there for the two-night Chandler Shaw Memorial, the driver that passed away, that I got to meet twice. and they had it was a Chandler Shaw Memorial Pure Stock Factory Stock Challenge. They did such an awesome job getting pre-registered cars and stuff for that race. They had 70 pure stocks and factory stocks for that race. And pre-register, they had 5 more show up on that practice after the fact. So they had a total of 75, and they were going to take 24 for the feature. And then they ended up deciding to take 30 for the feature. So there was a lot of drivers that went home. We had Yankee drivers from up north come down. We had drivers from all over the South, as far as Louisiana, come up there. So, they did a good job with that race.
Yeah, that was a big one. It was in honor of Chandler Shaw. So you were there for that race.
Yes.
Bo Slade basically dominated it and took home the victory driving the Chandler Shaw number 51.
Yes, he kicked butt and took hit him. Him and Tucker Bird were the two best cars of the night. And there was a lot of Mississippi drivers that come up that were really, really good, like Johnny Pinnell. I think Blake McNeil was in it. It was a bunch of really good drivers. And Tucker Bird had the lead for 2 laps, I believe it was. And then Bo Slade took the lead. I think Tucker may have slipped up, and Bo took the lead, and he never looked back. And just to see, whenever Mitch was interviewing him, I was taking pictures, and he did donuts, and it was so cool, because Chandler Shaw was his best friend that passed away. So their whole family and Bo's family got on the track, and that was a really cool, really cool thing to pay tribute to his friend that passed.
An emotional victory for everyone that knew Chandler Shaw and the unexpected situation that happened. Jared, we've talked a little bit about Southern Dirt Track Report. Where can you find it at? Do you have a website? Who do you get a hold of to add content? Let's get all that rundown.
Okay, cool. So we don't have a website finished yet, but Artie is looking to get one. And if there's anybody that has a business that wants to sponsor the Southern Dirt Track Report, let us know, because we can advertise your business on our Facebook. Just look us up, Southern Dirt Track Report. I think we have an Instagram. I don't use Instagram, but I believe we have that. They can follow us on YouTube. We post our race videos on YouTube, so we'll have all our feature races there. And Artie does most of the video filming since he's got a good phone. And then he puts a lot of the videos on our Facebook page too. We also have several other pages. We have a photography page where I put all my photography shots. It's SDTR Photography, which is short for Southern Dirt Track Report. Then we have a group called Modified Mayhem for modified drivers. And then we have a Southern Dirt Track Report heats page for all our heat races. And then we have an asphalt page for our asphalt. And we currently don't have anybody to cover the asphalt racing, but if there's anybody that would love to cover from Five Flags Speedway to Mobile or any asphalt track, let us know. And I can't think of the other pages we have, but those are the main ones.
All right.
So
we're going to bring you guys on once a week. We're going to give you all about a 15-minute segment. I guess Artie can't come on, you'll come on, but we have some future plans maybe to get you guys settled into your own show. If y'all like coming on here and talking about racing, maybe we can move to
that'd be awesome. That sounds great. That'd be great, because I love the idea of the podcast, and I was listening to your interview with the driver earlier. That was really cool.
Yeah, Taz does a great job. Taz started with us about a year ago as kind of a fill-in for Craig Moore, who was having some health issues, and he took the guy met me on the internet, and just from day one, it's been like we've known each other our whole lives. So Taz fit in really well, and you have fit in really well with the dirt track community, Jared. I appreciate all your hard work and stuff. It's nice to see people carry the tradition that Heather and I kind of feel like, we were one of the first ones that really brought stuff to the web the way that we did, and the video and the photography and all that mixed into one, and the promotional side of it. And of course,
as I got further along in the announcing, I had to, you know, basically focus on that if I wanted to continue doing that job. And so to see what you guys have done and what Southern Dirt Track Report's done and what Just Dirt has done with their enterprise, it's just awesome to see everybody come together for one to make racing a lot, you know, easy to follow. That's basically what you're doing, Jared. You're making dirt track racing easy to follow, and you're putting content out there that's very enjoyable. We want to thank you for coming on. Look forward to having you on weekly. Mr. Jared Hudson, do you have anything before you go?
Yeah, just thank y'all for having me, and y'all be sure and go like Southern Dirt Track Report. Artie is planning a giveaway at 10,000 likes, so we're trying to get to 10,000 likes, and we're trying to, you know, just anybody that wants to volunteer. We don't want somebody that's going to be lazy and not do nothing. We want somebody that really helps us, that loves dirt track racing, and even if it's a track promoter or just a track owner, and they just want to share their post of their track, we'll be glad to have them. And, you know, just remember that. Another thing to remember is God loves you, Jesus saves.
Amen. I like that. Thank you, sir. All right, that was Jared Hudson, guys, from Southern Dirt Track Report. Guys, if you are in the neighborhood of Facebook, go check out their page, follow them, give them a like. We look forward to expanding this enterprise, not only with this radio show, but also within the network, because we are in allegiance with the 110 Nation. Race Chat Live is basically on the air because of the 110 Nation Sports and everything that Mr. C-Day Sports does. If it was not for his backing, this show would not be funded. And what we've been able to capitalize, we have over 1,200 episodes with 110 Nation, 35,000 downloadable content that people have downloaded from us, 35,000. Of course, over at 10 years, I think that's probably a number that we could work on a little bit better, but it's consistency, right? And so we've come a long way. What we're able to offer people who are coming into the network is the ability to jump straight into podcasting, straight off into the Apple Podcast, straight off into Spotify, straight off into iHeartRadio. We've already done the groundwork to get these guys there. It's something that Mr. CJ Sports and I and Ms. Lee have worked on for a very long time, getting us to this point to where we're able to be on these available platforms. I can remember sending out fake email addresses through Spreaker just to try to get enough people to follow the show so that we could have the opportunity to be on Spotify and iHeartRadio. I believe it was iHeartRadio at the time that we were shooting for. So now we've got the groundwork laid. We've got the availability to bring on and offer guys like Southern Dirt Track Report a spot. And if they do well on our show, then hopefully we've lost Steve and we lost Mike Perricone. We've lost Izzo. So, you know, it's time to start bringing in a new group of people to expand the show and expand the enterprise. Taz, what did you think about Jared Hudson, man? He was on this game, wasn't he, buddy?
Oh, yeah, he was. He likes to travel to different tracks and get to know everyone and stuff. So he knows his stuff, and he enjoys racing regardless if it's asphalt or dirt. He enjoys it.
One thing I do want to say, Taz, I enjoy you. And when Craig is on, I take kind of more of a back seat to the show. And I feel like Craig and I kind of set the flow different per show. But Taz, to have you being able to stay with me when I'm lead on the show and staying with Craig when Craig's lead on the show, it really shows your adaptability. Because Craig and I, we kind of do things a little bit different. We have different approaches that we roll with. And, you know, it's for you to be able to come in and be as versatile as you are by the way that I would conduct the show versus how Craig does, it just shows that shows your talent is well above mine or Craig's, because you know, you can basically come in and work with either one of us, whoever's kind of the mainstream on the show, and you know, your content that you bring is bar none the best of the best, and I've always wanted to compliment you on that, and you know, not to
give you a big head or anything, but, man, you are awesome.
Well, sure do appreciate it, but before we get into our picks and get ready for Dover this weekend, I did touch base earlier and see what Chris's reaction is to this, and of course, I'll kind of get into mine, but I'll kind of keep it quiet because I still have to attend the race. I have to be nice and everything, but so SRX earlier, as I mentioned, is announced their format plus championship points distribution. They're running two heat races. Each heat race will be 15 minutes in length. When the time is up in each heat race, the leader will take the white flag, signifying that's the final lap. And then they'll have a feature race, which will be 100 laps at every track except for Slinger. Slinger will be a 150-lap feature. That's the only track that will be 150 laps. How does the starting order and each event work? All six races will follow this structure. All drivers will be lined up by random draw to start heat number one. Drivers finishing positions in heat one will be inverted to start heat race number two. Drivers will line up for their feature based on their finish from heat race number two. And in the feature race, there are unlimited attempts at a green-white checkered finish. Their championship points distribution is pretty simple for the most part, the heat races. You start at 12th for first, and you work your way down by 1 point, all the way down to 12th. It gets 1 point. That'll work for both heat races. The feature race, the winner gets 25 points, second gets 22, and it goes down by 2 points, all the way down to 12th. That gets 2 points for that. Of course, all full-time SRX drivers will be eligible for the season-long championship. Obviously, the one-and-done drivers or drivers that are maybe racing two races, depending on who they are, obviously won't be eligible for the season-long championship. But that is the event format, points distribution, how they're running it. Chris, before we get into our picks in the last 10 minutes of the show, your thoughts?
The SRX is going in the right direction. 6 weeks is going to be one of the best 6 weeks of my lifetime. I think it's during the same. Start times is the show Yellowstone, so I hope to have my DVR ready for Yellowstone because I'm going to be all in on the SRX. My wife doesn't know this yet. Hopefully they will be the same start times. I'm really looking forward to it. And you know, I'm not so thrilled about some of the drivers, but I do understand that that's what you're, it's the all-stars, and it's kind of hard to think that Bill Elliott is still an all-star. and some of the other drivers, Bobby Labonte, think they've seen their better days. But nonetheless, it's going to be an exciting series. I was disappointed to find out Jeremy Mayfield was not going to be a part of the series, so they had fooled us to make us believe that they were. So that was a little disappointing there. But all in all, I'm just ready to see what this series is about. I want to get the first year under the belt. I think it's going to be more successful than the AFL, what was that football
XFL
league that they had? The XFL, I think it's going to last a little bit longer than that. Tony Stewart and Ray Evernham's put a lot of hard work into this. So CBS, they're going to be the center of motorsports attention during the 6 weeks of this, and I think that it'll have a lot of people tuned in to see what it's all about. Of course, we got Dover coming up this weekend. There's 20,000 available tickets. All are sold out. So Dover has a sellout crowd. This coming weekend, we're going to the Monster Mile, the concrete. This is typically a place where certain drivers run well and other drivers don't. It'll be interesting to see how this package works, being that, they're back to their high horsepower packages again. And, of course, they raced the high horsepower package at Darlington. It didn't really give as much of a good race. So hopefully this will, this is another high-paced racetrack, right?
So the same people that we've seen out front at Darlington, we should see that same group of drivers up front here at Dover. Anything that you want to add to that, Taz?
Yeah, Dover to me is kind of like the bigger track of Bristol, put in a way. You have if you run the track right, there is multiple groups of racing, and of course when you come off the corners of 2 and 4, you're going to be slipping and sliding. They call it a monster mile for a reason. It's a monster of a track. I mean, of course all the tracks we go to has their own unique features, but there's something about Dover that's just unique from most common tracks. Not only the concrete, but just how it races. We all know that you're going to have success there repeatedly. I mean, look at Jimmy Johnson. He went after he couldn't complete the Dover Dozen, but he's won there 11 times. Obviously, the guy knew how to drive the track. So if you have success at that track once, you're going to have success there again. And it doesn't have to be wins necessarily. It's just a matter of if you're consistently a top five driver at that track, regardless of what equipment you're in, you're going to be up there. If you're a consistent 6th through 10th guy, well, you're going to be there. It's just a matter of not only equipment, but how well is your driving talent. And it shows at this track. And it's very odd to really see that for a track that's not really a short track, but not really a road course either.
Yeah. You know, you remind me with the concrete stuff. Oh, concrete Carl always was a dominant factor at this type of racetrack. We also have another concrete racetrack that we're coming up to that we haven't been to in years, and that's Nashville Speedway. So it's going to be interesting to see if anything carries over.
This is the only race we get at Dover, because Dover used to have two races, and because of Nashville and Dover owning Nashville, Dover lost the date so Nashville could get one this year. So instead of having two races at Dover, we're now having one. And if you haven't had success anywhere in the NASCAR circuit, but you have success at Dover, you better make this one count.
Yeah, I haven't checked the odds yet for and that's so disappointing to see that, you know, a racetrack that has always given such great racing like the Monster Mile is only going to get one race this season. And, you know, we're oversaturated now with road course races. It was not ever in any intention to take short track racing off of the list, right? I mean, we wanted to get rid of mile and a half speedways, and I think we've done a pretty good job of that. I'm already missing Chicagoland, I'm not going to lie to you, and I miss the green wall at Kentucky. And, you know, if they take away Homestead, my heart's just going to be broken, because those were not the everyday mile and a half speedways. But, you know, you're kind of left with, okay, well, what mile and a half speedways are you talking about? Like California, Charlotte Motor Speedway, those tracks are not going to go anywhere anytime soon. Let me check the odds.
Well, California is going to be a short track here soon, within the next year or two. But
yes, that's and possibly changes to Atlanta Motor Speedway as well. Would they just need to bring a refaving in on that one? They've got to get that soon.
But race schedule quick before we get into picks and odds. Friday, May 14th will be the ARCA Menards Series East Series, practice and qualifying at 1:45 p.m. Eastern. No TV, no broadcast coverage of any sort on that. Then their race will be at 5 p.m. Eastern for the General Tire 125. That'll be on MRN for Motor Racing Network Radio. Saturday, May 15th at 1:30 p.m. is the NASCAR Xfinity Series Driting 200. And Sunday, May 16th, will be the NASCAR Cup Series, 2 p.m. Eastern for the Driting 400. All of both of those races will be on FS1, MRN Radio, and TSN3 for you Canadian folks. And for those wondering about the Dash for Cash for Xfinity, eligible for Dover is Allmendinger, Allgaier, Barry, and Brandon Jones.
Well, it's your usual suspects in the NASCAR odds. No surprise here. For a 7-2 fractional win, a plus 350, that's Martin Truex Jr. Second on the list is Kyle Larson with a 4-1. Third on the list is Denny Hamlin with a 6-1. Kyle Busch and Chase Elliott both share the 8-1. Kevin Harvick's a 17-2. Brad Keselowski a 13-1. William Byron 16-1, Joey Logano 16-1, and Alex Bowman a 20-1. Interesting fact here: Ryan Blaney 22-1, and Christopher Bell 25-1 bet. They seem like those are probably your better money bets right there, considering both of those guys are basically due. What do you think about Vegas basically saying Martin Truex, Kyle Larson, and Denny Hamlin are your new big three?
Doesn't surprise me in terms of Truex and Larson. Obviously, we've seen how well Larson's been running this year in Hendrick Equipment, Truex being the only multi-time winner, Hamlin being consistent, but right now my thing with him is the win column. He hasn't hit that yet. He hasn't gotten the job done. He's gotten the work build up, but he can't get the job done. And I don't know if I want to place him in the big three just yet. I don't want to solidify him in the big three yet. Until he gets that win, I don't want to put him in the big three yet.
So points don't really matter.
Well, I mean, for Hamlin's sense, he sees, oh, points matter because if I'm regular season champion, I'm in the playoffs. So, but in a system where it's winning, you're in, where that matters more than points, I mean, it's kind of hard to kind of say, well, let's look at points. Go from there when we're basing things on winning, you're in, or winning, you move on. I mean, points is kind of like how much buildup can I get and how much buildup can I rely on, but it can only do so much. I mean, if Hamlin doesn't become the regular season points champion, but there's 16 different drivers or 16 different winners, he just got screwed out of it.
Right. Right. And I'm just really not sure if we're going to get to 16. It's going to be interesting as that gap starts closing closer and closer. What series? Did you say we have all three series racing this weekend?
Xfinity and Trucks. Or not Xfinity and Trucks. Xfinity and Cup. Trucks are off.
Xfinity. Okay. All right. Sounds good. Well, we've got about 5 minutes left. I think Ms. Lee made her picks. Craig, we haven't heard from him, so we don't have his picks. We'll get his picks up later. Mr. CJ Sports, did he leave his picks?
I don't have picks for anyone just yet, so we're going to be the first two.
No, Craig and I were tied in points. Okay, hold on. Let's have a great show tomorrow. Miss Lee, I believe, left her picks. Somebody left their picks. Okay, so Miss Lee's picks was Gregson and Harvick. I cannot believe we didn't give Mr. CJ Sports his picks while he was on the show.
You're going
to have
to have
these submitted.
That message over. I know she had Harvick and Greg. I know she had Harvick and Allgaier for last weekend.
Yeah, I found it right here. My picks are Gregson and Harvick for this weekend. I have just been god awful in the I guess the Xfinity picks, which one?
See, in the lower series you're kind of all over the place, but you've been on the mark for Cup.
Yeah, yeah. The trucks have kicked my butt in Xfinity. I'm sitting in third. Who is the dominant team right now? Who's the dominant Xfinity garage? Is it Junior Motorsports? Is it JGR? Colleague Racing seems to be one of the top stronger teams. Going into Dover, man, I don't know. It's like I want to go with Colleague Racing. If I do that, then I've got to go with Dinker. I've got to go with Dinker on a short track. That's not typically where he runs well at, but I feel like his experience. Alger, he won that race at Darlington because of experience, right? I mean, that's why he was able to beat Josh Berry. Because Alger has the experience, and this is one of those racetracks where I think that's really going to benefit driver and AJ Allmendinger. But I think he's going to be his experience is going to be the benefactor to this weekend. On the Cup side, Truex, the guy just looks unbeatable right now. Oh goodness, we get the 90-second call here. I guess I'm gonna go with Kyle Larson again this week. I'm gonna go with Kyle Larson.
Well, Xfinity, I'm looking at Junior Motorsports, JGR. I think a lot of people are gonna go with Justin Allgaier. They're probably gonna lean heavily on him, but I'm gonna look in JGR and I'm gonna look at a guy who's I actually had to look up his stats for this because I was thinking him how well he's ran so far this year. In his three starts at Dover, he's finished in the top 10 at each one of them. He's led 23 laps there. He has two top fives. I think he's due for a win, not only at this track, but for this season. I'm going with Daniel Hemric on the Xfinity side.
Oh, I was going to say Harrison Burton, but yeah, Daniel Hemric, that's a good one.
He's not a Dash for Cash driver, so I'm going to have to go with I'm going to put my money on Allgaier for Dash for Cash on that one. I'm just going to play it a little safe on that. And then Cup side, I'm looking at Hendrick particularly. And I have to go with a guy who's just been on a rail so far this year. I'm going to go on the same page as you, Chris. We're going to see our second multi-time winner this season. I got to go with Kyle Larson. I mean, he's won at this track under Ganassi equipment in that 42 car that everyone else has struggled with. Look at the tear he's on with the 5 car.
Right.
He's a favorite.
He is. And it's one of those tracks where you got to race on the high side there. And I don't, between him, Reddick, and William Byron, those guys are some of the best at it. But, don't sleep on Truex Jr. Obviously, he may have a career year this year. He's in the right equipment to have it happen. So if you guys have stayed along, we appreciate you listening to the show. If you're listening to the podcast, then this is the part of the show where it was not live anymore. I want to thank y'all for listening to Race Jet Live. You can join us every Monday night. Normally it's Craig Moore and Taz Taylor and Chris Creighton, a caution flag of racing radio on. But we were short with, Craig's not short. Craig was just not with us here tonight. Hopefully everything's good for him and we'll be having him back next week. But Taz, thank you for being a co-host here this evening as always. And we'll look forward to seeing how our picks end up after this weekend. It's going to be a beautiful weekend for racing. Hopefully y'all go out and support your local dirt tracks or your local tracks and just share your experiences any way that you can. And we need people at the racetrack, guys. And COVID's over, and it's time to get our lives back. So go to the racetrack, support these guys. They raced even when there wasn't fans in the stands to keep this tradition alive. It's time to go out and support these guys and show them that you appreciated the entertainment factors that they bring to us week in, week out at these local racetracks.
For Taz Taylor, Craig Moore, Chris Creighton, we hope that y'all have a great weekend. Taz, is there anything you want to leave us with?
Like you said, support your local tracks. I know NASCAR has been trying to emphasize on the local short tracks with their weekly racing Advanced Auto Parts series. I know they're doing a fan contest at the moment with those tracks, so vote for your track if it's still on there. If your local track is not on there, vote for your regional track. And get on there, vote advancemytrack.com. Hopefully you guys get out to a track, get out to a race this weekend. And I'm looking forward to Fonda for $1 night, grandstand admission, only $1 to get in. It was a hit a couple of years ago. Stands are packed. We're looking at that again. And hopefully we get more racing in up here as weather's looking nice. And don't forget to follow us on all forms of podcasts, our Facebook page, Race Chat Live, 110 Nation Sports, and the website, the110nationsports.com. And thank you for listening along, everyone.
Yeah, and also More to Music. If you need any DJing up in the northeastern region, go check it out, More to Music. Also, Yellow Caution Flag, our Facebook page as well. Go follow them and our racing group, Dirt Track Racing. It's all capital letters. Taz, are you in our Dirt Track? Are you in my Dirt Track Racing group?
Yes, I am. And also, don't forget to like TNT Designs. I do have Race Chat Live stickers on the way, along with TNT Design stickers on the way as well. I should be getting them in a couple of days.
So exciting. So exciting. Now, if you sell like a million of those, then I think we have to give at least 10% to either charity. When I say charity, I mean Mr. CJ Sports. No. But on the real, though, hopefully we'll sell a million of them and have that kind of problem. But thank you for listening to Race Chat Live, and we just appreciate the support that we get. And y'all have yourselves a good week. And as Taz and I both said, go enjoy a local dirt track. Go out there. Go sit in the grandstands. Even if you got to wear a mask, go sit in the grandstands. Enjoy yourself a good dirt track race or a short track race. The racetracks need you. They need you more than ever. And one thing that we just miss seeing is big crowds. Unfortunately, it seems like only the big races are getting the big crowds. We need medium-sized crowds for the regular racing, because without that, then we won't have weekly racetracks. Y'all have a great weekend, and enjoy the springtime weather. Of course, it's starting to get real hot down here, but that's what Mississippi's known for. So y'all have a great night. Thank you very much for listening to Race Chat Live. We'll leave you with our theme song.
Just a good old boy, never meaning no harm. Beats all you never saw, been in trouble with the law since the day they was born. Straightening the herd, planting the hill. Someday the mountain might get him, but the law never will. Making their way. That's just a little bit more than the normal allows. Just a good old boy. Wouldn't change if they could. Fighting the system like a new modern day Robin Hood.